Okay, now it is recording. I don't know, we will go from here. So hopefully this will be available on the website, but all the messages from John and will be available on the website in about the end of October. After we leave Cameroon, we go home for 1 week and then we go to Kenya. So we will not be back until October. Give us a little bit of time to recuperate, and then we will put these things on the website and they will be available. So if there's something that you think, now what did they say, or I didn't quite understand that, you can look it up on there, okay? Psalm 32, verse, what did I say?
It's 5.
5, okay. Can you read that for us, please?
I acknowledge my sin to you, and my iniquity I have not hidden. I said, I confess my transgressions to the Lord, and forget the iniquity of my sin.
Okay. In the New American Standard Translation, it says, I've confessed my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. God removes sin from our lives through the blood of Christ. He restores us to relationship with Him when we confess it and ask His forgiveness. But He also removes the guilt. The guilt. If you have confessed something to the Lord, whether it was in your past, whether it is getting angry at your husband or whatever it is, if you have confessed that to the Lord, He has forgiven you of it, and He has also scrubbed away the guilt. If you are still feeling guilty about something you have already brought to the Lord, that's the enemy accusing you. Because we know that Satan is the accuser. Christ, through His blood, views us as we are viewed as acceptable to God, and we can approach the throne of grace with confidence. That's what it says in Hebrews, isn't it? Okay, so for me, this verse is very key. When I'm feeling bad about myself or like, you know, I've done something wrong, I have to go back to this verse and say, He forgives the guilt of my sin. Okay? So good. Know that going into this. One of the things we are going to talk about is that the wife herself is aggressive in the stimulation of her husband's sexual appetite and desires. According to Scripture, we are not just to be passive. You're not fulfilling your role as his helpmate and as his wife to make the and in the covenant of marriage to make your relationship sexually exciting if you're like this. Okay, let me know when you're done. You know? And you may be exhausted from caring for the children or your job or whatever your situation is, but it is still possible and it is scriptural to be aggressive in stimulating your husband sexually. Let's look at some passages. I'm going to ask different people to look up a verse and then we will talk through those verses, okay? If you do not want to read, if you don't have your Bible, you don't have your glasses, you'd rather not read, just when I ask you, and I'm sorry I don't know everyone's name, but when I ask you, just say, and we'll just go to the next person, it's no problem. Okay? Okay. Song of Solomon, and we're going to be in Song of Solomon for these. Song of Solomon 1, verses 2 and 4, 2 through 4. Let's see, and I'm sorry. Let's start with the first row. Would you like to read that? Do you want me to get someone else? Oh, okay, great. That's great. Okay, and the next one is going to be Song of Solomon 1, 16 through 17. So she can just... It's right after Proverbs. And while they're fine, let me give the other verses out and then you can find your verses and I'll give you just a few words on the books, the Song of Solomon, okay? Now, and I love your dress, it's so pretty. I love that shade of green. But I don't know your name, so I apologize.
Elfrida.
Elfrida?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Would you look at Song of Solomon 3, verses 1 through 4? Okay?
Yeah.
And Madam, if you would please look at Song of Solomon 7, verse 6. And Mercy, Song of Solomon 7, verses 10 through 13.
I didn't get the first one.
Yours, the very first one is Song of Solomon 1, verses 2 through 4. And then if you would read Song of Solomon 1, 16 through 17. It's okay? You want me to give that to someone else? You're a good reader. Thank you. Let me mention real quickly, sometimes it is taught that the Song of Solomon is intended to be a spiritual book, that you interpret it as describing God's love for us as the bride for the bridegroom, Jesus representing the church, or Jesus and then is the bridegroom and we are the bride as the church. It's fine to take to apply that in a devotional sense. That is just fine. But Song of Solomon wrote this in a description of marital love. I mean, Solomon wrote this song as a description of marital love. So it is literally describing a husband's relationship with his wife. Okay? So don't be afraid to read it and take it literally, because that is actually the way it was written. Okay? Let's look at these verses. Song of Solomon 1, verses 2 through 4. And we are talking, we are looking for, when we read these things, how the wife is being aggressive in the stimulation of her husband's sexual appetite and desires. Song of Solomon 1, verses 2 through 4.
Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. Because of the savor of thy good onions, thy name is as onions poured forth. Therefore, do the virgin love me. Draw me, we will run after thee. The king has brought me into his chamber. We will be glad and rejoice in thee.
Okay, good. So what do you see in this passage? How is she being, because this is the bride speaking. How is she being aggressive in her relationship with her husband? May he kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. That's pretty aggressive, isn't it? What do you think your husband would do if you walked up to him and said, "Oh, kiss me with the kisses of your mouth"? Would it make him happy? Probably. When our children, when they saw us being affectionate with each other, they would go, "Oh, oh, oh." But now that they are grown themselves and married, my oldest daughter will be 40 the end of this month. Or next month, September. They have each come to us and thanked us for showing them what it means for a mother and father to love each other. So it is good for your children to see that you and your husband love each other. Okay? So, telling him you want him to kiss you. What else? Look at verse 4. What does verse 4 say? Draw me after you and let us run together. Now, do you ever pull your husband into the bedroom and say, "Oh, come on. Let's enjoy each other. Throw yourself on the bed and pull him down." You know, see, I'm not saying things to try to embarrass you, but to try to illustrate that these things are scriptural. That's what the bride is saying to the bridegroom, and it's not just him running after her. She is also being aggressive. Okay? Song of Solomon 1, 16 and 17. Or read just verse 16. That's good.
Behold, thou art said, my beloved, ye listen also our bed is green.
Okay. Tell him how good looking you think he is. When he is dressed up to go out the door for church, or when he is relaxed around the house, or whatever the situation is, tell him how handsome you think he is. That's not flattery. It's complimenting him. It would only be flattery if it weren't true, or if you were trying to maneuver or manipulate and get something out of it. But be genuine. Tell him how much you appreciate him. And it says, indeed, our couch is luxuriant. What does your bed look like? Is it luxuriant, or is it full of laundry that needs to be folded? How do you think I know some of our beds look like that? For many years, I worked hard at creating an attractive living room and dining room, the areas that other people saw. But my bedroom was full of all the things I didn't have time to put away, and projects, mending, or something I had started and not had time to finish. I literally finished a baby quilt for my baby as we were going to the hospital for her to be born. But I made the decision several years ago, actually 1 year ago. We moved into a new house, a different house, and I decided that my bedroom was going to look like a place that I considered important enough to keep neat and to make beautiful. So it doesn't take a lot of money to make your room neat. It actually doesn't take any money. It just takes clearing things out. And what I learned when we moved, because we moved from a larger house that had room for four children to a house that just had the two of us, so half the size of our first house, I learned that there were many things I didn't think I needed. I thought I needed that I didn't really need. And so we found new homes for them. We gave some things away to two men in our church who had just moved from another country and had just an empty apartment. We gave some things to our children that they wanted to have for the memories. We gave them some things away to a charity. In other words, we just cleared out a lot of things that I really didn't need, but I just was thought I might use someday, so I was hanging on to them. So I don't know your situations, but whatever your situation is, make your bedroom attractive. You know, it doesn't have to be a new covering for your bed, but it can be a clean one. And it can be ironed. And your curtains can look attractive. Okay? Make your couch luxuriant. Okay? Song of Solomon, let's see, 3. I'm going to shorten and not make you read all those verses. Let's read just verse 4. Song of Solomon 3, verse 4.
That's scarcely had I left.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Them. When I found my love, I caught and held him icy. Then I brought him to my mother's house, into my mother's bed, where I had been conceived.
Yes, I gave you a different verse first time, didn't I? I apologize.
Yes,
I apologize. Okay. So in this section, in this verse, the bride, again, she is being aggressive, isn't she? She's gone out looking for him. She's not just sitting at home waiting for him to come back. She is out looking for her husband, and when she finds him, she grabs him and brings him back home. Okay. Now let me ask you to read the verse I actually gave you. Song of Solomon 7, verse 6.
No, it was 3 verse
2. Ah, okay. Well, I think we'll just go with this verse 4 and go on to the next one. Okay, sorry. Song of Solomon 7, verse 6.
How beautiful you are, and how pleasing, O Lord, with your light.
Okay, that's great. Now this is the bridegroom speaking to the bride. And he is telling her she is beautiful. Now when your husband tells you you're beautiful, do you kind of refuse to accept the compliment? We do that, don't we? We say, oh, but my hair is not good today. Or, oh, but this dress is old. Or we kind of, he maybe comes over even to hug us and we kind of say, oh, but I'm taking care of the baby. Don't do that. Ladies, don't do that. Enjoy your husband's admiration. Take him, believe him when he says that. And be charming. It says, show him your charms, your delight. Let him know how happy you are with him. Okay? Let's look at one more. Let's look at Song of Solomon 7. And this time, let's just read 10 and 11, please, Murphy. I know I've told you longer, but we'll just go with that. Okay, we talked about this, didn't we? Let us go out into the country, let us spend the night in the villages. So figure out a way to get some time together. Usually, when John and I are struggling in our relationship for one reason, you know how you just, he does something that irritates you, and then you do something that irritates him, and you're just kind of like with each other? I would say 3/4 of the time, we have had too long without physical relationship, and we're tense. He's tense, and I'm tense, and then we start reading into each other's what we say, and getting our feelings hurt. And pretty soon we get hurt. Can you all hear? I'm trying to speak strongly without shouting at you. I'm not a preacher, I'm a teacher. So the point is, be aggressive. Go after your husband. It is scriptural. It pleases God when you do this. And it will make your husband happy. He will go, oh my goodness. Now, he may not believe it at first. That's okay. Keep at it and he will believe it. He will believe it and he will enjoy it. It will make a huge difference. It's, in a way, it's the same concept as our children. Sometimes you go through a difficult stage with your child where you are disciplining. They need to be disciplined. They need to go through those times, but you've got to balance that with positive times together. You and your husband will go through difficult times together, whether it's financial, whether it's problems with the children, whether it's problems with a job or a church. That's just life, isn't it? We go through difficulties. But if you have that core of a strong relationship, and an aspect of that is a strong, healthy, physical relationship, then that will carry you through those times when you are really struggling, because there is no way that he knows so completely that you are on his side as when you give yourself to him and even pursue him, so that you know that he is attractive to you and that you want that aspect of relationship with him. Okay. Song of Solomon 8, verses 14 says, hurry, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of spices. Do you ever tell your husband, oh, hurry, hurry, I can't wait for you? Make him happy. Let me share with you. Okay, let me just say one more thing before we go on. All of this is intentional, isn't it? This is something you have to think about ahead of time. I'm not saying it's not romantic, because it is. But it's also something that you think about. Romans 12:2 says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that you may prove what is the will of God, what is... Oh, my mind is... Who can finish that verse for me? We prove... Okay, great. God gives us a new mind from what the world says. Don't believe what the movies say or magazines or TV about romantic love. That's Hollywood and London or wherever else they make shows, Paris. Those people are the most decadent people on the planet, are the ones who make some of the TV shows. You know, they have no view, real view of what true godly married love is like. So don't see those things and then believe that that's the way it's supposed to be. Love your husband, enjoy being with him, enjoy the romance of it, but some of these things have to be intentional. When my children were babies, I would work my day so that I could take a short nap when the babies took their nap. Now, first of all, you have to teach your children to take a nap at the same time or play quietly in their beds so that you know they are safe if you're not around. But then I would take a 20-minute nap or at least lie down and read a book or do something that was me by myself where I could recharge a little physically so that when my husband came in the door, I wasn't like... And then before he arrived, I would change my shirt so that I didn't have babies sit up and, you know, spaghetti sauce or all of these things. I could wash my hands. I could change my shirt. I was a little bit rested. So when my husband came home, I was ready to receive him. Now, that's intentional. I didn't necessarily feel like doing those things. But love is intentional, isn't it? Love is patient and kind. Think of what 1 Corinthians 17 says. Love seeks not its own. Love is very giving. And that's the kind of love we're talking about, married love. Okay, 7 ways the wife excites her husband. I'm going to give this to you kind of quick. And some of these you will know, some of them may be new to you. A lot of this was new to me. So I'm only sharing with you things that I have learned over the years. Okay? One way the wife excites her husband is through visual stimulation. Women are primarily stimulated through touch, which is why when we are upset, like when my father died, I wanted my husband to hold me. I certainly did not want anything to do with a physical relationship. I wanted to be held. I wanted him to comfort me. That was what I wanted. Okay? We'll talk in a little bit about how different it is for men in that area. But the way we are comforted and the way they are comforted is totally different. In terms of visual stimulation, men are stimulated by sight. There are times when my husband is comforting me and my response to him is physical. It is physically, sexually stimulating for me to be held like that or for him to caress me in different ways, in different parts of my body. But men are primarily stimulated through visual stimulation. Proverbs 27:20 says, Sheol and Abaddon are never satisfied, nor are the eyes of man ever satisfied. Will your husband ever grow tired of seeing you in your underwear? No. It does not matter if you are 20 or if you are 65. It does not matter if you've just had a baby, if you've just had hip surgery, if your hair is washed. The eyes of a man are never satisfied. That is why men struggle so with pornography. So we can meet that need for our husbands. We can meet that need as a ministry to our husbands. Song of Solomon 2, verse 9 says, "My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, he is standing behind our wall. He is looking through the windows. He is peering through the lattice." So, and guess who he is looking at? He is looking at his wife, because if you read further down, he is about to go into the house and greet her. But before he comes in, he's looking at her through the window. He enjoys looking at her. Let him look. I have a friend who is so embarrassed about her body that she used to change clothes in the closet. And I don't know if her husband ever said anything to her, but he said something to my husband that it really hurt him that his wife would not let him look at her. It really hurt him. It hurt his feelings. It made him feel like she was pushing him away. And their marriage struggled. There were other issues, but that was a small thing that she could have changed. And I even spoke with her about it because we were in a marriage Bible study together. And she said, I just can't do it. I just can't. Well, if those are some issues for you, work through them. Don't let your marriage grow to a point and then stop just because you are not willing to do something that will please your husband. It is not worth it. It is not worth it. Is the woman in this verse embarrassed or repulsed by the fact that he is looking at her body like a gazelle or a young stag in heat? No. It says that she welcomes him when he comes in. Okay? So that's one way. Husbands are stimulated visually. Let me give you an example. This was in the U.S. My husband went into a auto parts store where they sell parts to replace worn-out parts in an automobile. And there was an ad for shock absorbers. Do you know what a shock absorber is? I don't know much about cars, but there's something that goes underneath the car, and it, when you're going over bumpy roads, it stabilizes it so it doesn't bounce quite as much. But they wear out and have to be replaced. So this was an ad for shock absorbers. They are greasy. You have to go under the car and take the old ones off, and they have all the dirt and grease of the road, and then put the new ones on. It is a very greasy, dirty job and kind of an ugly-looking part, just a metal part to go underneath the car. But guess what the ad was in this store? And mostly men go into auto part store, right? I don't go into them because I don't know anything about what's in there. This is what the ad was. It was a cardboard figure about this tall of a young lady with her hair perfectly combed, pearl earrings, red lipstick, red bikini, high heels, holding a shock absorber. Now, what does her dress have to do with a shock absorber? Nothing. Do you understand what I'm saying? Selling a shock absorber has nothing. The quality of that shock absorber, the way she's dressed, says nothing about the quality of it or the value of it or why you should choose that brand over another brand, does it? So why did they have that display like that? Because every man who walked into that shop, his eyes went right to that figure, and here's the name of this brand of shock absorbers, and he sees that. And then when he goes to buy them, he's thinking, oh, well, there's this brand, and that's what he buys. It's advertisement, and it works, and that's why they do that. Let me give you another example. My husband was speaking on this topic to a group of men, and he had a picture cut out from a magazine about this big of a lady walking down the street. She was carrying a shopping bag, and she had on a very low-cut blouse. And he said, men, look at this picture for a minute. And they did. Then he put it down, and he said, what color was her bag? Did any of those men know? It was bright red, by the way. Did any of those men know? No. They didn't know that she even had a bag. Their eyes went to her body. The eyes of a man are never satisfied. Okay. That's the first way to stimulate your husband sexually is visually. Make yourself attractive for him. Do what you can with what you have. I have never looked like a model, even when I was 20. I certainly don't now. But you can do the best with what you have, knowing that your husband chose you above all other women. You can be attractive to him. You can stimulate him with the way you dress. When you are by yourself, you can dress in a very sexy way for him. You know, even right after our baby was born, you know, when I was had all that baby tummy that you have. I had a little 90 that was sheer with a low-cut neckline, and he loved it. I felt ugly, but he loved it. So stimulated. Okay, number two, the wife is conscious of her clothing and appearance, dressed up for him. Down to the station. I think you all call it petrol. We call it gas, but fuel for the car. I drove down to the station, put gas in the car. A man came up behind me and said, "Sir, that just wounded my heart." But I realized that I was dressed in the same clothes that a man was wearing. From the back, you know, baggy shirt, baggy jeans. From the back, he couldn't tell. Dressing like that when you are home and relaxing is fine. Or if you are out digging in the backyard, that is fine. But we need to make sure when we are around our husbands, and certainly when we are around anywhere else, that we are dressed attractively. And the women in Cameroon do a great job with this. Because when you all go somewhere and you fix your hair, you wear pretty hair coverings, you wear pretty dresses. In a lot of European countries, we have much to learn from you. Because I see people who are visiting other countries and I'm embarrassed. Because I have everything stuffed into a duffel bag. And it is wrinkled, and it is old, and it is masculine. Dress in a way that is attractive to your husband. Proverbs 31:17, when it's describing the godly woman, says she girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. I am recovering from hip surgery. I had last September, I had an artificial hip in place. And for a while, I was unable to exercise, but now it is healed and I'm getting my strength back. And I have been going to physical therapy, and I have bought a stationary bike that I can, you know, it doesn't move, but you can pedal it and strengthen your legs. So I'm trying to get my body in condition. So figure out a way to do that, whether it's walking, whether it's trying to do a video or get together with other women or whatever it takes. You know, maybe even get a group going at church. I have been, our church at different times has had women groups that would get together and exercise. It's hard to do. It takes time. But the godly woman was in good shape. So that is another way that we can bless our husbands by being in good shape so that we can be responsive to him. When you are overweight, sometimes, I'm not sure how to say this delicately, sex can be uncomfortable. Okay? Number three, her hair is her glory. I already told you my experience when I went out in old clothes. My hair obviously wasn't fixed. I would have thought someone would have known I was a woman just by my hair, but he didn't. So, let your hair be your glory. Again, I think women here really have this figured out better than we do in the U.S. because you do so many different things with your hair. And it really is lovely. But do it for your husband. Have you ever asked him what he likes? Does he like it straight? Does he like it curly? Does he like it with attachment? I can't remember the word for it. Does he like it in braids? You know, how does ask your husband what he likes? It will make him feel special. And who else are we dressing for? We are not dressing to please each other. We are dressing to please him. Number four. Use your eyes. Song of Solomon 4, verse 9. You have made my heart beat faster, my sister, my bride. You have made my heart beat faster with a single glance of your eyes, with a single strand of your necklace. Do you ever look at your husband when if you were on opposite sides of the room and give him a wink? Or give him a look? Huh? What verse? Song of Solomon. I just said it. Let me find it in a second. Oh, Song of Solomon 4, verse 9. With a single glance of your eye. Do you ever look at your husband and go, no? Does he know what that means? I mean, you know, it can mean all sorts of things, but it might mean, guess what? Make your relationship fun. We have, in my house, we have clean sheet night. On the day that I change the sheets, my husband knows that is a night that is going to be romantic for him. And so when he comes in the door and sees the pile of dirty sheets, his eyes light up because he knows. So you can have fun with your husband, with your relationship. Can you hear me okay? Kind of. I'll make sure I'm looking this direction too, so you can hear. Okay, use your eyes. Use your eyes. Okay, number five. Remember, we're talking about, what did it say, seven ways? Number six, use your lips and your mouth. Song of Solomon 4, verse 3. Your lips are like a scarlet thread and your mouth is lovely. Have you ever asked your husband what kind of makeup he wants you to wear? Now, my daughter's husband likes her to look very natural, so she does not wear much makeup. John tells me I don't need it, but I notice whenever I don't wear anything, he asks me if I'm feeling okay. So I think I need it, or else I look a little pale. So find out what your husband likes. My husband loves red lipstick. It is difficult to wear all the time because it comes off on glasses and, you know, it gets smeared and doesn't look really good. But whenever we go out, just the two of us, I wear red lipstick. I brought some with me on our trip. So find out what your husband likes and use your mouth. Okay. Last one, number seven, and this is a biggie. Let him be excited about your breath. Song of Solomon, notice how so much of what I'm sharing from is from the Song of Solomon. I'm going to give you an assignment in just a minute that will be from this book. Song of Solomon 7, verses 6 through 8. How beautiful and how delightful you are, my love, with all your charms. Your stature is like a palm tree, and your breath are like its clusters. I said, I will climb the palm tree. I will take hold of its fruit stalks. Oh, may your breath be like clusters of the vine and the fragrance of your breath like apples. When your husband wants to caress you, do you slap his hand away? Do you say, oh, not now, I'm fixing dinner. Or, you know, I'm doing whatever it is. Or do you stop a minute, turn around, let him fondle you, put your arms around his neck, give him a big kiss, enjoy the moment. Enjoy the moment. My husband, you know, when you share things that are close to your heart, it comes out, doesn't it? My husband is almost I want to be able to talk. I don't mind crying, but I want to be able to talk, and I can't do both. My husband is almost 65. I am 6 months older than he is. He turned 65 in December. I don't know how long I have with him. You know, God knows the number of our days, and we don't. And that's his plan. That's okay. We both know where we go when we leave this earth and go to be with the Lord. So I'm not fearful. But we need to enjoy the moment, ladies. We need to enjoy the moment. We don't live in fear for the future. The godly woman smiles at the future. And that's the attitude God wants us to have too, to trust him. But enjoy the moment. Enjoy the moment with your babies, even though they keep you awake at night. And don't want to eat when you want them to eat. Enjoy the time with your husband, though, too. Enjoy it. You don't want to, you want to be able to look back and have many, many special memories. Not to wish you had been closer than you were. It doesn't matter if you are newlywed. It doesn't matter if you've been married 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 40 years, like me. There is always some way that you can grow closer in your relationship with him. So do it. Don't resist it. Don't put it off. Do it. That's my prayer. The one thing that I pray you will get out of this whole time together. Okay. So let him enjoy your breasts. Let him enjoy your breasts. Okay. I want to look at... Let's look at three women. Let's look at Eve, Genesis 2, verse 25. These are examples of women who please their husbands sexually. Genesis 2, verse 25, and the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. Now we know this was before the fall, before sin entered into the world. So being naked together was a good thing. Neither of them were ashamed. So being naked before your husband is nothing to be ashamed of. In God's eyes, it was good. It was good. So the example of Eve. Now let's look at Rebekah. Genesis 24, verse 67. Genesis 24, verse 67. Oh, I sent the water with my husband. This is sparkling water. My throat gets dry. I feel funny. Okay. Genesis. Where am I? Genesis 24, verse 67. Mercy, can you read that for us, please? Oh, here. Let me read it. Mercy, you look up Genesis 26, verse 8, okay? And I'll read 24:67. Then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. And then listen to this last part. Thus, Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Isaac's mother had just died. He was very close to his mother. Rebekah was his wife. And how did she comfort her husband? In the Bible, when it says he took her, that means they made love. They had sexual relations. That's the way the Bible describes either taking or knowing someone. You know, that was the way that they described a wife having sexual relations with her husband. So this is what comforted Isaac after his mother's death, was for his wife to make love to him. Can you imagine that? That would do absolutely nothing for me. And she was probably mourning her too. You know, she certainly had been greeting people or doing whatever the custom of the day was. But she put that aside in order to give her husband the comfort he needed. So remember that. My husband and I were watching a movie once, and it was about a tornado. Do you know what a tornado is? Where I come from, they are very frequent. Giant wind swirling, and it's strong enough to blow down houses, or this one had destroyed part of the town. And so this man and wife were scientists, and they had been studying this tornado, and they had had problems in their relationship, and at the very end, the storm is over, and it shows them in this embrace. And I looked at John and said, oh, yeah, sure. You know, they were all dirty and sweaty and had just gone through this horrible storm. And here they are embracing. And I thought, that would never happen. And he said, oh, I can see that happening. That is just one way men are different from us. When they have gone through a stressful time, sex is comforting to them. That is a way you can minister to your husband. I did not know this for years and years and years because I was relating to my husband in the way that I felt instead of finding out how he felt. Does that make sense? Know that one of the most difficult times for a husband to remain sexually pure is when he is under stress. Whether it is an event, whether it is problems at the job, whether it is problems with his extended family. That is when our men are going through the strongest temptation, and that is when they need us to be there for them sexually. And that is a time when it may require you to be more aggressive with him because they are just overwhelmed with their situation. But just know that that's true. Okay? Now let's look at Esther. Everybody turn to the book of Esther. And then we are going to wrap this up. It's right after Nehemiah, Chronicles and Kings and all that stuff. Look at Esther chapter 2. Esther is a woman we all want to emulate, right? Because she saved her country single-handedly, a woman of great courage and faith. But let's read what Esther did in this area. I'm going to read to you. Mercy, I didn't let you read your verse, did I? Let me read that verse for us, please. I apologize. I get thinking about, you know, what I want to say and the direction I wanted to take, and my brain just... And then I made you turn to Esther and lose it. So I double apologize. Okay. Genesis 26, verse 8.
When I had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked down from the window and saw Isaac caressing his wife Rebecca.
Okay. Now, we read before how at the death of his mother, Rebecca comforted her husband, Isaac. But now we are reading a little bit later when the king looked down out of his window and he saw Isaac fondling Rebecca. She was not slapping his hand away. She was not saying, we are in a public place, would you leave me alone? We don't know whether how secluded their area was, but not too secluded because the king looked out of his window and saw them. So let your husband be physically affectionate with you. Let him, when he wants to touch you, let him do it. That's the idea behind this verse. It's not just my idea, it's God's idea. Rebecca was a good example. She didn't do everything right, but this was one thing she did right. Okay, Esther. Esther 2. Let me read verse 8. So it came about when the command and decree of the king were heard and many young ladies were gathered to the citadel of Susa into the custody of Haggai, that Esther was taken to the king's palace into the custody of Haggai, who was in charge of the women. So the king was choosing a new queen, a new wife, because his old wife was, his original wife was not submissive to him. So gathered together all these young women, and he put them into the care of a man named Haggai, who is in charge of the women. Okay? None of these people were believers. It was a pagan king, a pagan palace. Haggai was a pagan. So he was not a godly man. In verse 9, now the young lady pleased him and found favor with him, so he quickly provided her with her cosmetics and food, gave her 7 choice maids from the king's palace, and transferred her and her maids to the best place in the harem. Okay? So he noticed her, and he decided to do some things for her. She accepted his help. She didn't say, no, you're not a godly man. I can't accept anything from you. She recognized that he knew he was an expert at what he did. So she allowed him to help her. Okay? Let's look at verse 12. Now when the turn of each young lady came to go in to King Ahasuerus, after the end of her 12 months under the regulations for the women, how long did she spend making herself beautiful? A year. For the days of their beautification were completed as follows: 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with spices and cosmetics for women. And then it describes how in the evening she would go into the king, in the morning she would return. She would not again go into the king unless the king delighted in her and she was summoned by name. And then we go on with the rest of the story. But the point is, Esther was willing to learn from a non-believer, and she was willing to take the time to make herself beautiful for her husband, who was the king. By this time, she was his wife. It wasn't a Christian marriage because he wasn't a Christian, but he had taken her as his wife. We can learn things about pleasing our husbands, about beauty, from non-Christian sources, okay? From magazines. Look at the perfume ads that are on billboards around town, or that you see maybe in a magazine or a paper. What are the women dressed like? Because those ads are directed towards men. They want them to buy perfume for their wives. So look how the lady is dressed. Look at what her skin looks like. Look at her clothes. Look at her hair. She has made herself to be enticing. We can learn from that. There's nothing wrong from learning about beauty from a secular source. Esther did it. Esther did it and was successful and ended up saving her country. Okay? Ooh, I need to hurry. Okay. Let me share one more verse. And then I have a couple of quick things, and then we are done with this topic. And I hope that this has been helpful to you all. I appreciate your being attentive. The hour after lunch is especially difficult because you have that food in your stomach, and you're sitting in one place. Easy to for your attention to wander. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 34. This is talking about single people and married people. And his interests are divided. And the woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord. It's 1 Corinthians 7, verse 34. It says, the woman who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy, both in body and spirit. They're having a good time, aren't they? But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. So according to the Bible, what are we to be concerned about? Pleasing our husband. Can we have 2 more minutes? Please. I'm sorry? Oh, sure. Please. So it pleases God for us to learn how to please our husbands in this area. Let me share with you some differences between men and women. You may or may not already know this. Some of these I have just learned recently, even though I have been married 40 years. Still learning. Men are sexually stimulated whether they want to be or not. A picture beside the road, even another woman walking by, can be sexually stimulating to a man even though he doesn't want to be stimulated by that way, by this person. It just happens. He cannot control it. He can control what he does after. You know, he can control how he acts after he has realized he's had that thought. And men struggle, Christian men struggle constantly with the area of purity. It has nothing to do with their spiritual maturity. They cannot help it. Women cannot be sexually stimulated against their will. When a woman can only be sexually stimulated if she wants to be. That's why rape is so horrible. Because it is done against her will. And rape is not the fault of the woman. We've already talked about the fact that men are comforted by sex and women are not. When a man is under stress, he is very susceptible to temptation. If a man does not have sex two or three times a week, he experiences physical pain. I don't know if you knew that or not. It has to do with the sperm and I don't know how all the biology works, but it's physical pain. And ask your husbands. Ask your husbands to explain it more, but it is true. Because of this, I tell you, can't get any more right than I am right now. Because of this, men masturbate. Women very rarely. But it's the only way to relieve this pain if a man is experiencing it. So that's why I say it is a ministry to your husband for you to ensure that he is satisfied sexually. You know, not out of a sense of duty, but motivated by your love for him and your desire to give yourself to him as a way of pleasing God. You may have never thought of it before. It doesn't mean that we don't enjoy it too. Sometimes you have to get things in motion before you have the feelings. And then the feelings will follow. But remember, we are not doing it for our own pleasure. God gives us pleasure. It is certainly not wrong to experience pleasure in your marriage relationship. But a man, it is very rare for a man not to have an orgasm when he is having sexual relations. I don't know that it's not even impossible. But for a woman, we can be involved in a sexual relationship and not have an orgasm every time, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's just the way we're difference in the way we're made. So we need to recognize that these are differences in the way God created us. There is no right or wrong about it. It is just different. But if you know these things about men, that it helps you know how you can minister to your husband. And as I said before, you are in a unique position to minister him in a way that no one else can. And we've been kind of joking about Hezekiah and Jezebel, but certainly in this area, there is no one I want to minister to him but me. And the only one that God will bless in this relationship with him is me. So be that for your husband. Be intentional. Think through some of these things. Look up some of these verses. A lot of these verses are on the sheet that you were given. Some of them are extra ones that I have added. Okay? My prayer is that your married life would be richer and fuller and would grow for many, many years as you relate to your husbands and seek to make your sexual relationship fulfilling for him and for you. Father, I thank you for this time. I thank you for these ladies. I thank you that you have given us direction, even in this most personal and sensitive area of our lives and our marriages. We commit this to you and pray that your Holy Spirit will continue to instruct us. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.